Hi, and welcome to the Planet LP podcast. I'm Ted Asfergadu. For Prince fans, June 25th, 1984 is an important date. That was the day that the album Purple Rain was released. An album that vaulted Prince from, hey, this guy's pretty good, to Baby, I'm a Star. I don't think what went into making this album, the movie, the music videos, even the concert performances was anything other than calculation. It was a calculated move designed to vault Prince into the A-list. And guess what? It worked. Worked so well that 40 years later, we're talking about Purple Rain. That's what this episode is about. Totally devoted to Purple Rain at 40. And with me is an esteemed panel, a longtime contributor to the Planet LP podcast. He writes for Popdose. He wrote for Ultimate Prince, Diffuser FM. It is Keith Creighton. Welcome back to the pod, Keith.
How's it going? Good to be here and can't wait to start talking Prince and all things Purple.
Me too. Also on the pod is Theo Gonzalez. Theo and I have known each other since 1991 when we were both graduate students at San Francisco State University. And during that time, we became friends and he told me that Prince was one of his musical heroes. Flash forward a few years later, maybe decades later, and Theo got to hold one of Prince's guitars at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C. And you texted me that picture, Theo, and you said, I was trying not to break out into a sweat while holding this guitar. Welcome to the Planet LP podcast. Don't break out into a sweat. You're among friends, my friend.
Great to see you, Ted.
Great to see you. And back for a second time is Matthew Wilkening. Matthew is the editor-in-chief of Ultimate Classic Rock. He is also a contributor and editor to Ultimate Prince. And this is the second time he's been on the Planet LP podcast. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Ted. Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So like I said, got some heavy hitters here. So with that, let's get started. To kickstart the conversation, I'd like to go around the horn and ask each of you, starting with Theo, what your Prince origin story is and how you reacted to Purple Rain, the album, the first time you heard it. So Theo, you're up first.
Sure. My Prince origin story goes back to my childhood friend, Ricardo Iglesias. We were little kids. This must have been 1981. I was in middle school and he held up the phone to me. We were talking to each other almost every night and we would do things that kids do, which is to chat about everything. There was one night he held up the phone and he wanted to play for me this music that his sister introduced to him. And it was the Controversy album by Prince. So that was 1981. And that's how I got started. My brother and I then started listening and we started buying Prince albums, going back in the catalog, moving forward. And by the time 1984 hit with Purple Rain, we were already deep into it. We loved what we were hearing and we couldn't wait to see what was going to happen with this new video, this new movie. And that just seemed to kind of take things to a different level. But by that time, I was also a kid raised as a Roman Catholic, and I was playing music by Prince in the Catholic masses on a weekly basis, playing things like Darling Nikki and I Would Die for You, Purple Rain, of course, but smoothed out versions, you know, because there's in the Catholic mass, there's a lot of interstitial moments that you need as transitions from one part of the ritual to the next. And so I was kind of disguising the music for my friends as they were sitting in one set of pews, but then also playing it for the other general congregation. So there's Korean and Filipino aunties that would later say, oh, that's really kind of nice, mellow music. So as you finish your communion, you're sitting there and you're kind of meditating about the sermon. You're hearing my version of Let's Go Crazy or Darling Nikki or whatever it was. And it was, for me, it was an important lesson about how music could communicate different things to different people at the same time. And I've been trying to work with that music and that legacy of Prince ever since.
I want to say you're a subversive by doing that. But then you look at Prince's worldview at the time, and he was very devoted to God. So there was this sort of duality that's going on, the dirty side and then the religious side.
That's right.
Yes.
How about you, Matthew?
Yeah, the sacred and profane. Very good. Matthew, how about you?
Mine is I'm a little fuzzy on the details. I know it was the 1999 era, And I know my sisters were playing Corvette in 1999, and I was trying to resist it because I was a heavy metal kid. And they set off my contrarian streak, you know, like, well, if my sisters like it, forget it. I want out. But I was the kid on the block without cable. My parents decided we're not doing cable. So the only time I could see MTV was if I watched it at my friend's house, or I think I was cat sitting or something. I got to watch it. And oddly enough, they had the Dirty Mind video on, and that song was just so undeniable to me that, you know, my radar went up and I'm like, okay, wait a minute, hold on. Maybe this guy's great. And I remember hearing Delirious after that. And then I was right tipping on the point. And then When Doves Cry and Let's Go Crazy, and it had guitar. So now my defenses were gone and I was all the way in, and I have been ever since.
He worked on you. He worked on you. Yes, yeah. Little by little. And it was the guitar that seemed to be the tipping point, right?
Right. If I had heard Bambi before, maybe that would have been quicker, but I didn't know.
Right, yeah. Right. How about you, Keith?
Well, my Prince origin story is unique because I originally hated Prince. What? Because, like Matt, we did not have cable on our block. We had to go down to the end of the street, into the basement of a friend, into their basement called the Omni. And then we would watch in binges MTV. And I gravitated towards all the videos that looked like little movies, you know, like the Kinks Come Dancing, Crocus, Midnight Maniac, you know, the Members, Working Girl. So that's what I wanted to see, especially since I was kind of transitioning from, I was raised on Fleetwood Mac and ABBA. And now in the early 80s, I was getting into New Wave. And so that's what I kind of wanted to see. And so they kept just playing 1999 and Little Red Corvette, which were performance videos shot on the same set. So they were basically the same video. Even Delirious, even though I wound up, Delirious was my gateway drug because I liked that. It was just different enough that it piqued my interest. But when Doves Cry came out, I was like, holy crap, what is this? Sonically, it was unlike anything I'd ever heard. It was weird, like New Wave. He was very gender fabulous with his clothing, which really made me, as a gender queer kid, long before we knew what that word was, I was like, oh, this is something I could really get into. But I was 16 at the time, so old enough to buy the record, not old enough to get into the movie. And the movie was like this fantasy world that I couldn't access. And you know, back in the day, if you missed it in the theaters and you don't have a VCR at home, you miss it. That's it. You don't see it again until you see the edited version on TV 10 years from now. So that's where I was just obsessed with it. And I didn't get to see the movie until the final week it was in theaters.
So, wow.
Yeah. It was one of those things where I was like, okay, I think the forbidden part of it was a great way of the whole gateway thing with Prince.
So just as a quick follow-up, Why did you wait so long to see the movie? Was it just that you didn't have the money? Your parents said no?
My parents wouldn't take me, you know, and I couldn't find, none of my friends liked Prince. And so it was kind of this thing that I had all to myself. And then oddly enough, I got my first ever girlfriend through Prince fandom, because the girl that worked at the salad bar in the restaurant that I was a busboy at said, my sister likes Prince. You should hit it off. And kind of going back to Theo's story, I met this girl on phone. We talked 4 hours a night for 5 nights in a row. We're boyfriend and girlfriend before we ever met face to face. And our first date was Purple Rain.
Wow. What a great first date.
Yep.
Wow.
Let's talk about Prince changing your life. There you
go. I hope your first date went better than Apollonia's and Prince's did in the movie, because that was kind of a weird first date.
We didn't wind up in the lake, that's for sure.
That's what I'm getting at.
Even though I did wind up in the dumpster, metaphorically speaking.
Yes, there you go. But it wasn't Jerome that put you in there. Okay.
There you go. Exactly.
So my Prince origin story is in high school. I was a junior in high school when we had a TV studio at our high school. It was a part of a program called Regional Occupational Program. And we produced a weekly television show for a cable channel, which was public access. Well, in the audio room, there were a couple of girls listening to Controversy, because I was all like, you know, I kept hearing, I think they're playing Do Me. And I said, who is that? And they said, oh, it's Prince. And at the time, I kind of conflated Prince and The Time as the same group. Right. I said, oh, Prince and The Time? They said, oh, no, no, no. This is just Prince. I said, oh,
apart from his group?
No,
this is Prince. I said, okay. So that was the first sort of minor introduction because I really didn't know much about Prince. When the 1999 video came on MTV, I was like, wow, this is really great. Pretty sexy too. And another friend of mine in high school, his name's Tony, he actually had the record. And I said, hey, Tony, mm-hmm. would you loan me the record so I can make a cassette dub of it? And he said, sure. So he gave it to me. I brought it home. And you know, the 1999, the one looks like a what? Okay. So you yeah. see basically a penis on there. And I stuck the record by the record player. My parents come home. My mom mm-hmm. sees it. My stepdad sees it. And they're like, what the hell is this? And I'm all like, oh, it's just a record I borrowed from a friend. They're all like, look at what this cover is. And I was like, I didn't notice that, you know, I had no idea. So that was my Prince origin story. But yeah. when Purple Rain came out, I was already knee deep into the Princesphere, whatever you want to call it. So when the movie comes out, I went to the very first showing of the day. It was like at noon. Oh. And I took my brother, Steve, who's 2 years older than I am. We sat through the movie. And at the end, you know, there's that sort of that freeze frame where Prince sort of looks at the camera and it freezes like that. And it's kind of, yeah. kind of this halo coming out of his head. My brother, who's not a huge Prince fan, he turns to me and goes, that's it?
Aw.
He didn't like it. And I said, yeah, I guess the movie itself wasn't that good. The performances were great. He really liked the performances. And so did I. But we were kind of driving a home and he said, what's so great about this guy? I mean, that movie wasn't that good. And I said, no, it really wasn't. I said, the story was kind of, I don't know, it really didn't do much for me. And I was a film major at the time. So he started pontificating about, you know, the problem with the character development. Like, what the hell did the dad do for a living? What did he do? Just smoke cigarettes and beat up his wife all day? And then claim he keeps a roof over his head, over their head and the heat on? And I was just like, my God. But I know when I texted the three of you, I said a lousy movie. And Keith, you said fisticuffs, man. It's coming. Yeah. I'd not think it was a lousy movie.
Yeah, I don't think it was a lousy movie at all. I love the opening. Check out the opening of the film where right. it introduces Prince, Morris, and Apollonia. And it does so within the context of Prince basically singing that song. Mm-hmm. And in that stretch, I mean, that's that extended version of Let's Go Crazy. It's just it's amazing to kind of see the three characters coming together. And it really sets up the drama, the trio. But you see all the characters kind of already formed. You can kind of see there's a rivalry. There's the new kid coming to town. And then there's kind of Prince commanding that stage. And to me, I just thought this is a blast. I was asking my brother, what am I watching?
Yeah,
because this is just amazing. I would have loved to see an entire film just of that, but yeah. that was a way to kick things off. And then when he hits that last flourish, you know, take me away, you know, the whole thing just kind of comes to a crash. I thought, wow, I just wanted to stand up and say, this is a great film. And it was only like 8 minutes, right? I mean, yeah. to me, I thought I knew I was watching something special in terms of music and probably in terms of film. I hadn't really watched too many films as a kid. Like that. But in terms of music and film, to me, that was just such a great and powerful combination. Again, it was a great hook. And I can't imagine too many films starting in the same way that sets up characters and then also has the drama of that music.
You know, I thought Morris and Jerome were a great comedy duo. I thought that they sure. kind of saved the film in many ways for me. Because without those scenes, I just felt like, wow, what those I didn't feel like it worked.
Because my whole thing was, this is one of the few times we ever saw Prince in the real world. You know, there's puddles and slush and it's gritty and, you know, real weather yeah. coming down on them. Because this is where I don't think Graffiti Bridge worked, because it was all shot on the soundstage in a sanitized set. And same thing with Under the Cherry Moon, since it was all very polished and kind of set in a different era and black and white. And Purple Rain set the stage for like 8 Mile, you know, in terms of, you know, here is our star in the real world and it's gritty and it's just visceral. And I just couldn't get enough frame to frame from start to finish. I was all in. I thought, especially when you read about how they made the movie and how close they were in production from this finishing of the script, it's just amazing. They got this thing made in the dead of winter and had it out so fast, all while Prince is recording a song a day and filling his vault with probably 200 songs in that era. So I think it's just an amazing achievement from filmmakers and the stars, and the fact that he put the revolution through acting and improv lessons, you know,
dance lessons.
Yeah. And so it's just like, I think it's just an incredible achievement that holds up. It's still streaming and I love it.
How about you, Matthew?
I hate to be a downer, but I'm team Ted on this one. I agree.
Expanded Siskel and Ebert here.
That opening, you're right about the opening segment, but I think that makes it a good video, not a good, but you know, once they really start talking, you're taking a step down in quality, but the videos are great. I think of it as more of as a long form video, like Three Chains of Gold or Diamonds. You know, I don't consider it fully a movie. I know it was, but I can't imagine how long it's been since I watched it or what would ever make me watch it again.
I would say the production of it was great. I mean, the way they filmed it, the way they staged it and everything, my God, it looked fantastic. And I just rewatched it last night ahead of this podcast. And I was struck by how well it was done. It was made for $7 million and it grossed $70 million at the box office. So yeah, a good investment. Mm-hmm. But you take all the performances out and then say, what is this story? It's a story about bands that are battling with each other. It's about domestic violence. It's about how domestic violence gets sort of passed down to the next generation. Yep. And it's about striving to come out of sort of a middle-ish, lower middle class upbringing where you're just kind of desperate to make it. And yeah, they vaulted to stardom. At least Prince did at the end.
Yeah, well, Prince mentions, you know, and this is in the book, you know, the coffee table book wrapped in blue purple velvet that came out from Andrea Swenson. She kind of gives the story about this. And I know it's been in a lot of the other books that have been made about Prince over the years that, you know, there was a rough, you know, idea for what the original movie was going to be. Then they brought in the new director who pitched Prince the story. And Prince was like, how did you come up with that story? Because that story is basically my life.
Wow.
You know, even though he said his dad in real life didn't drink and wouldn't be caught dead near a gun, you know, he said there was a lot of the emotional truth of his story was in Fagnoli's, you know, pitch to him. And so I think it was a very brave move to make a very unsanitized story. I mean, they could have made him just some superhero rock star. I mean, look at Vanilla Ice's debut, Cold as Ice or Cool as Ice, whatever that movie was. You know, they could have done a sanitized, you know, wank fest of a movie, but they didn't. They made something real, you know? And so I still think it holds up. And you have to admit, even though this was from California, that film shot, you know, what a great, you know, that one photo sells the movie, sells the album. And it's like, oh my God, whatever this world is, I want it.
Yeah. I think also the other aspect of this to me was being able to see black and white faces making this kind of music that, to me, it was crossing a lot of boundaries and genres in terms of rock and new wave, hip hop and soul. And for me, I was thinking this is a really great musical language being played by these beautiful faces that I don't usually see on mainstream films or on television, certainly. And I think if we were to kind of wind back to think about how the industries have been so segregated, both the music and the television and film industries were so racially segregated, even up until that time. I know folks have been talking about MTV, which was an incredibly segregated selection of artists until certain people had to break through, right? And to be able to see this, it was awesome. And I grew up on the Monterey Peninsula. So to me, you know, what was the big city? The big city was either LA or San Francisco. It was either that or New York. How about this? This is Minneapolis. This is kind of a window into a place that I have no idea where this is taking place. And it was as much kind of an education for me as it was a kind of a grounding, you know. And I love the way you talk about it, Keith, in terms of like kind of a grounding of the hero in reality. This is a reality. I thought, wow, I'd love to learn more about this. I don't know anything about this thing called the Minneapolis Sound. So it forced me to kind of think about these other bands and other scenes and kind of to think about what does that really mean to be part of a scene or a community. And again, it was just so rich. I get it. It's not the greatest cinematic achievement that's ever been accomplished, but it kind of allowed me to think about anchors and hooks into other topics that for me were just starting.
Yeah. And Theo brings up a good point that Purple Rain wasn't just an album. It was a fully immersive experience that took us through most of 1984, because you figured to get the full experience, you had to listen to Purple Rain, Ice yep. Cream Castles by the Time, the Apollonia 6 record, eventually the Sheila E. record, and then all the Prince B-sides. You know, every time he released a single, there was a new song that expanded the universe a little bit more. Then he would put out 12-inch singles, which, like on Let's Go Crazy, adds an entire whole bridge in the middle of it, you know, which was ridiculously exciting. And then the 10-plus minute I Would Die For You. Then you get another Lonely Christmas at the end of the year, which is the most depressing Christmas song ever, you know. And so then you get the tour, you know. So now you've got the videos, the albums, the B-sides, all the other bands, and now you get a tour where you're now with 18,000 of your kindred spirits in an arena. And so, I mean, it was really just a complete festival of experiences that took up most of the year.
Yeah.
Anything to add there, Matthew?
Not particularly. Those are good points.
They are. I think that Theo and Keith make excellent points about not only the fusion of styles within the music and also in the videos, where you have a different, a more expanded view of music, of the musical palette that seemed to be very segregated at the time. That's what I loved about it. I saw somebody with a look, a style, fusing musical styles. Like Matthew, I was more on the rock heavy, you know, not in heavy metal, but definitely hard rock side of things. So looking at Prince and thinking, man, this guy can shred it on guitar. This guy is super good. How come he's not on Guitar Player magazine, right? This expanded look and just the sort of the attitude of the world of, to me, it expressed America. I mean, it really was this sort of expression of pluralism, this fusion of styles. We like to say that jazz isn't an American genre. It is very much so, and a reflection of who we are as Americans. But I thought that Prince, with Purple Rain and prior albums, was really doing something similar, like what jazz was doing, was fusing these styles and saying, hey, it's not just, you know, this kind of new wave stuff or hard rock or whatever. Look at it as it comes together as one sort of fusion. And I was always into that aspect of it. And I think that that's kind of framed my worldview.
After I got into Prince, I went to the guy at the record store that I knew, and I said, okay, what is this? Where does this come from? And his math was bad on purpose, but what he said was, Prince is half George Clinton, half James Brown, half Jimi Hendrix, half Sly Stone. And so that sent me on a huge, you know, mission to just to find and devour and, of course, instantly love all of this stuff and send me in. It just, and like I said, that's probably a third of my record collection now.
Well, he might not have been wrong on the math there, Matthew, because Prince is not a woman. He's not a man. He's something that you'll never understand. So there it is.
I think that's the best thing that music can do for you. Because when you ask that question, like the way that Matthew asked, like, where does this come from? You know, it presumes that it's part of something bigger. And you want to know more about that. You want to know how that person got there. And to go down that rabbit hole now we're thinking about Parliament Funkadelic. Now we're thinking about Sly and Family Stone. And of course, I know people are constantly remarking about Prince and Hendrix, but you know, there are plenty of other interviews where Santana was, and the tone achieved in just something very simple of holding a note with that kind of confident vibrato. I mean, that's a cool West Coast Chicano rock sound that's coming out of San Francisco. And so it's great to be able to do that, because I remember going, listening to other kinds of music and asking similar kinds of questions. And someone saying, well, you know, if you want to listen to this, you need to listen to Charles Mingus. Now you need to listen to, you know, Sonny Rollins. Now you need to listen to Clifford Brown. And, you know, that's a great gift. You know, somebody to be able to give you something that's inspiring and you realize, yeah, I'm going to chase down every album, every B-side, every iteration that this artist is going to create. But then now I'm going to chase down other musical traditions. And for me, it wasn't just, you know, the Black American musical tradition. I was also, you know, devouring Spandau Ballet and Ultravox and Roxy Music, who for me were kind of like an analog to what Prince was doing. You know, I was loving the fabulousness of the gold lamé suits from ABC. That was my band, along with Roxy Music and all these other kind of Euro weirdness of the New Romantics. And it seemed like he was also, you know, gesturing constantly toward that. It's got to look beautiful on stage. And yeah, we're going to wear ruffles and it's going to have silver and lamé and heels. To me, it was just a great convergence of a lot of different kinds of things, not just music, but again, also fashion and sexuality. So, I mean, wonderful rabbit holes to go down.
Yeah, the big thing we got to remember here, we've been talking about Prince throughout most of this podcast, but remember, Purple Rain was a Prince and the Revolution record. Right. And the members of the Revolution had a really prominent impact on the sound and kind of taking Prince to where he got in the Genius era. Because when you look at most people as their Prince fandom, kind of starts around Dirty Mind, kind of ends around Batman, and you realize... That was the era that Wendy, Lisa, Matt Thing, yeah. Bobby Z, Sheila E., plus the brothers of Wendy and Lisa, and, you know, all had a major impact on Prince's style and where he was going. And when he jettisoned all of them, that sets up where Prince went in the 90s and the 2000s, which was good, but nothing on par of what the Revolution did. And I still think, in terms of people's fandom and appreciation, Prince and the Revolution is what people really like. Next by Prince and the New Power Generation, and then probably third to all of that, just Prince's solo work. So
do you think that they helped him write those songs, or do you think that he wrote knowing what they could do, or he wrote seeing how they reacted to what he wrote, what he liked, what they liked and didn't like is what got on the record?
Yeah, look at Dirty Mind. That was a Matt Fink Rip. You know, synth line, you know? Yeah. And so it's stuff like that. And then, like, especially in the book, and especially if you read Dwayne Tudall's books, you know, you look at the influence of all the different sounds that they brought into his life that he was then able to run with and flourish, you know? And so from specific, like, Middle Eastern instruments that start showing up on Purple Rain and then take over completely and around the world in a day.
Imagine Prince without that influence of Joni Mitchell, of not being able to incorporate that. Another dimension. I mean, we all know that he can kind of really stay locked in a groove, in a pocket. And in many ways, again, that's what the time represents so clearly, so aggressively, in such a masculine kind of way. And again, look at their styles, very much zoot suits, gangsters. And it has that heavy vibe. But then he's also absorbing and kind of translating what Joni Mitchell means to him. And it's, again, it's interesting to kind of see his musical brain try to come up with his own voice.
Yeah. Hey, so as we're hitting our little time wall here, self-imposed, I want to close with this. Because we've talked sort of in the weeds about Purple Rain, about concerts experiences and things like that. Let's just kind of go around the horn again. What's the best track that stands out to you, the most stellar track on this record that you, when you listen to it, you're like, that's it. That's the track that sealed the deal for me. And I've heard When Doves Cry a lot because that was the lead single. But now that you know, we've all listened to the record over and over for the last 40 years, there must be some track that kind of bubbles up and you say, like, that's it. That's it for me. We'll start with you, Matthew.
I'm always dazzled by Take Me With You, especially as like the two and the 1-2 punch. You know, he comes out hitting so hard with the guitar and the rock on Let's Go Crazy. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, now that I got you here, you know, this is really me more. Try this. Deal with this. Mm-hmm. But I will say, after the day he died, I was in Miami for my sister's wedding. Mm-hmm. And her wedding was the next day. And it honestly affected me enough that I wasn't fully there for the wedding, which I regret, but I was trying my best. I mean, his music means that much to me. When I got, and I didn't listen to any music until I got home. And the first thing I put on was Let's Go Crazy. And the energy and the life and the happiness and the joy and the positive message that's in that song, I finally just broke down and cried because I can't believe that that's out of our lives. Mm. And that song still now, because of that moment, whenever I hear that song, like, it's better if people aren't around. Like, I'm still that's my memory of Prince dying and how much he meant to me now.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. How about you, Theo?
Oh, geez, Matthew, thank you for sharing that. That's really amazing. Well, I have to agree with you. You know, Let's Go Crazy and Take Me With Your are great tracks. I'm going to go with Computer Blue because the use of that drum machine just kind of in that particular tempo and cadence. And then you've got Wendy and Lisa with the invitation at the very beginning, that vocal invitation at the beginning. And it spins out of control into this beautiful thing with that father song that he adds in on guitar. To me, it was kind of like a mini symphony as you're hearing it. Now in the movie, of course, it's a bitter, you know, it's coming at a bitter point, you know, it's raising certain tensions between he and other characters. So I loved how cinematically it was working for me, but just when you sit down and listen to the music, and of course you listen to the hallway version that goes on for like 17 minutes or whatever. To me, I just love the unfinished weird lyrics that were kind of placed in different locations. And to me, that drum machine kind of droning on, it just seems to be just such an amazing little symphony of funk and rock that it is nearly perfect. I just love it every time I hear it.
Oh, excellent. Good story. How about you, Keith?
Yeah, same thing. On the original play of the album, Computer Blue is my least favorite. To me, it was a segue between the intensity of The Beautiful Ones and then the audacity of Darling Nikki. But then when the hallway speech version came out, and if you have a lot of bootlegs, there's a bunch of different takes on the 15-minute jam session that was Computer Blue. And to me, the Computer Blue hallway speech version is the apex of Prince in my collection in terms of just, you know, maybe up there with, you know, like the second track on Sign of the Times Live, you know, Play in the Sunshine. But when the full band is going, because this was a full band jam at Sunset Sound in Los Angeles that did the hallway speech version. And to me, that just shows all the musicians hitting the peak cylinders, all the spoken word entries, you know, it just shows the entire kaleidoscope of Prince's creativity.
Version, yeah. Okay. All right. So how about you? For me, it was Let's Go Crazy. Mm-hmm. I can't. That's what hooked me from the get-go, because that was the first song on the record. I never grow tired of that song for the guitar on there. It's just so amazing. And especially that last solo that he does. The scream at the end, take me away. I was watching the movie last night. My daughter was on the couch playing her video games, as she tends to do on her laptop. And she was listening to the first part of the movie. And she says, wait a minute. Did he just say, don't let the elevator bring us down? The elevator? Was he Easter egging his own death? Oh, my God. You know?
My gosh. And he mentions in the book that the elevator is his metaphor for heaven and hell. Yeah. You know? And he said, don't let the elevator take you down was his thing about don't go to hell. And so he did prophesize that quite a lot.
But the thing was, I started laughing because I said, that's pretty funny. And I said, you mind if I use that in the podcast tomorrow? And she goes, yeah. I said, I will credit you. So Maya, this is all on you. Right. This is because of you. This was a really great deep talk and deep dive into Purple Rain at 40. Keith, Theo, Matthew, thank you so much for joining me on the Planet LP podcast for this retrospective.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ted.
That's it for the Planet LP podcast. I'll be back next time with more deep talk about music right here on the Planet LP podcast.